My name is Eleanor Jewel Clufio. I'm here in Hudson, New York on North 5th Street on Wednesday, June 17th, 2015, as part of the Oral History Summer School Archival Project. I'm here interviewing Ms. Toni Cross. Ms. Cross, would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm Toni Cross. I'm from Hudson, born, raised, and still living in Hudson.
Can you tell me a little bit about where you come from? What was it like growing up?
Oh, I come from Hudson because I was born, raised, and still living in Hudson. How was it growing up? It wasn't like it is now. It's far different from what it is now. Everybody knew everybody. Seemed like everybody was somewhat responsible for everybody. You couldn't go 2 feet away from your house without somebody knowing you. And if you went 3 feet, somebody would say, "Does your mother know where you are? Get down the street." That type of thing. So things are a lot different now. Nobody really pays attention to other people as far as like the children. I had a parent on every block. I remember being 16 years old and getting lost in Hudson, a place that I was born in, because we weren't allowed to go only a certain amount. I could go from one corner to the other corner. Our house was in the middle of the block, and I better not cross those streets. And that's the way it is. That's the way it was. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I think that's the way we kind of do my grandkids, because it was safe back then. It's not safe now. It's not safe. I don't know half the people that live here in Hudson. And I've been here all my life. I started out at 213 Columbia Street. That's between 2nd and 3rd on Columbia. We moved down to 15 North 1st Street, which was right off of Columbia. Then we moved back up to 22 North 2nd Street, which was on the corner. Columbia was right on the side street. 2nd Street was the side street. Then I moved to the high rise, which was on 2nd Street. And finally, I'm here on 5th Street, still off of Columbia Street. So we didn't go too far. You knew better. People were close-knit. Everybody's parent knew you, and they might not have knew which child you were, but they knew you were Bernice's son or Bernice's daughter, Edward's son or Edward's daughter. You know, that's the way it was. Not different from that.
Why do you think it changed?
Times changed. Factories moved. I know my father worked at the cement plant. He worked at the Lone Star cement plant. And when the Lone Star moved, he had the option to move in with them. And he wasn't moving out of New York State. And he was close to being retired, to retiring anyway. So he retired. So that was our family. But we have a lot more factories back then. You had the Lone Star, you had the Atlas, you had the Canada Dry, you had the Match Factory, you had the Pocketbook Factory, you had I worked at a factory where they made baby clothes, and then they had the Glue Factory down the street. They had L&B. So many factories. They're not here now. So that meant when they left, a lot of people didn't have jobs. Some of them moved. Some of them were old enough to retire. But then other things started coming in. Like recently, you got all the antiques. Hudson's not really antiques. Most of the people probably could give you some of their stuff and say it's antique, rather than to go to a store and buy a real antique. When the antiquers came, they came from the city and whatnot. And unfortunately, try to bring some of that mentality with them. Everything went up. People couldn't afford it, so they moved. Yeah, so I think that's a lot of the change. And one of the things, and it's still now, is because a lot of the people that live here came from down south. A lot of the blacks, they came from down south. So their big thing was their children had to be educated. And once they were educated, there was nothing here for them. So they went others. So they didn't bring a family back to start families here. So that's why we don't have, you know, that many people that you know. So many, like the Bangladesh, they moved in. Mexicans moved in. That wasn't here when I was growing up. You had basically your blacks, your whites, and to break that down, you had your Italians. And that was it. You might see maybe one Hispanic here or there, but that wasn't a big thing. Yeah, so when I grew up, everybody, I thought it was so funny. As I was growing up, I thought parents had to go to school to learn to be parents. Only because when we were walking to school, the group of us, what'd you have for dinner last night? Oh, we had beans. We had beans too. What'd y'all watch? Well, my mother did this. Well, my mother did too. So I used to believe that as a kid, a small kid, they all went to school. They learned the same thing. On Mondays, you had beans. On Tuesday, you had spaghetti. On Wednesdays, you had soup. On Friday and Saturdays, that was potluck day. And on Sunday, you had a big, big meal because everybody did it. So I just figured somebody had to teach them to do that. You know, so you don't have that now. We have so much more modern technology. I mean, we were out. You knew what time to come in. You didn't have to have nobody tell you to come in. You have to look up and the street lights come in, start coming on. You better be by your house. And in the summertime, you were allowed to stay out in front of your house, but you didn't go past that. And that was only maybe another hour after it got dark. And then you knew to come in. They didn't have to have a curfew. Your parents had a curfew. Your parents told you when to go and when to come. And you better not disrespect another adult, because that was the same as your parent. You know that now. Times changed. Some people still have it. I still have it. But that's because that's the one I know. And I don't want to go. I don't want to venture any further. I don't want to venture with children not saying yes, no thank you, please. Yes, ma'am, if need be. If need be. If that's what's going to cause you to give respect, then that's what you say. Mr. So-and-so. I don't care if they're your mom's friend. If they're your mom's friend, then you should be putting a handle on their name, because they're not your friend. They're your mom's friend. So you're not peers. You're not equals. So that's the difference.
What were some of the things that you did as a community when you were younger?
Well, I remember growing up, there was Girl Scouts then, and you don't have it as much now because they can't get leaders, but there was Girl Scouts, there was the YWCA, which they didn't have. The Boys Club was the Boys Club, not the Boys and Girls Club. Girls were not allowed in the Boys Club. Maybe on Saturdays they would let us come in, but it was only like for an hour or two and not with the boys. There were Cub Scouts, and you got together with that. And, of course, church. You always got together where church was concerned. I don't remember any big thing, like the whole community coming in, other than school events, because you knew your friends and they were part of the community. Other than that, I don't remember any big things. Most of the places where people work, like the Lone Star, at the end of the summer, they'd always have a company picnic. And because that was one of the big factories, a lot of the men did work there. So you got to see a lot of families on that day because they were there. And then the churches would have the big church picnics. And you might not have went to that church, but somebody from that church invited you, so you got to see more community there. I don't remember too much big community things happening until I had children. After I had children, then I saw the Black Festival, the Italian Fest. I remember the Italian Fest every year because I remember them marching in the parade with the statue, and then going over to Mount Carmel and having big festival fried dough and everything. It would last for about 4 or 5 days. It might have been all week, because on the Sunday they would have the parade and it would march down. And then I think it was like every night we'd go over. It was over there on 2nd Street. But other than that, everybody took care of their own. And that was about it. And then after I had my kids, the CC Club started the Black Festival. My mom was one of the ones to help get it going. And then the community would come out. And I do remember there might have been some things. I don't know who did it. It might have been, the youth department, because we used to have the soapbox derby, where the boys would build, and that was a boy thing. Girls couldn't do it. The boys would build their little soapboxes, and they'd get up on the hill, up on probably 5th or 6th Street. Yeah, it was probably 5th Street, because that's where the hill is, because the Pride Cleaners was over there. And they'd go down to 4th, and that's how they would race. And then after my kids came along, they started doing something with the bed races. And they'd have these great big beds and with wheels on them, and people would be in the beds and they'd race them down the hill, and the community would come out for that. When Hudson High had started their marching band, and they'd have the big parades, the community definitely came out to see the kids in the marching band, more so than just a regular parade, to see their own children in it. They were definitely out for that. Nothing more than that, you know, as far as community. When the high rise came about, I moved in the high rise like the second or third year that they were in. They started doing things in the high rise to get the families together with all those families, and then community would be involved. But you had your own little sections and you kind of like stayed in it, and I guess that's community, but people just stayed in their own little sections. They were happy to stay in their own little sections. You knew where to go and where not to go. I don't remember being able to come, as a kid, being able to come past 3rd Street by myself. And I also remember when they did allow us to come, and I mean my parents allow us to come, I had to have my brothers with me. We just didn't go everywhere. And if anybody saw you and you weren't with somebody, they were concerned. You know, your parents don't. Does your parent know where you are? Yeah, I'm supposed to be going to the store. You go to that store and you come right back. Don't let me not see you come down this way, you know, because you knew how to come. I was allowed. We lived on Columbia Street. I could come to 3rd, then turn up on 3rd and go to State, because Charles Williams was on Robinson Street. So you had to go to State and then over to Robinson. That way I could come. If I went any other way, I was not going the way my father told us to go. And he took us by our hands and showed us how. You don't go any other way. You're on Columbia Street. That way they knew where we were at all times. And of course they knew that they had people that knew us. And you were going to be safe going here, there, and the other place. We went with my sister. I had a younger sister. And four older brothers. And whenever we would go, it would always be at least 2. And my mother and father would say, you leave here with them and you better come back with them. And you'd always get one in the family that want to stray off. And you'd be like, come on, you got to come. You got to come home. Mommy's going to get us if we don't get home together, you know. So, and that's how all the families were. You know. They were very protective of their children and they kept it together. Now I look around, I'm not saying that people aren't protected, but they just do it differently, a whole lot differently. And I still have that inclined in me, it's instilled in me, that if I see a little kid and nobody's with them, like, where's your mommy? Are you lost? You know? Yeah, I would definitely help them find, because you just don't go away too far away from your house. If I see people walking up, and I do see it so often, young mothers, and the little child is walking behind them, and I said, well, she knows she needs to turn around and grab that little boy's hand. Somebody could snatch him without her even knowing, and by the time she realized that he wasn't behind her, they would be gone. So that type of thing is still in me. I try to make people aware of it, you know, hold that baby's hand, you know, that jump out there. So, and that comes from being raised in Hudson. Oh, we had playgrounds. We had Franklin Park, we had Charles Williams, we had Oakdale, we had Academy Hill, we had St. Mary's, and that was, you went to the one by where you lived at. And at the end, you went all summer long, and at the end of summer, they had this big fields day up at the high school, and you'd have different events that you would participate in, and there would always be a boy and a girl of the year that won bicycles. That was really, really great. And we knew Franklin Park won every year. And when all the kids from my neighborhood left Franklin Park, whatever park they went to is the park that would win. So then at the end of Fields Day, they would, that was by the youth department, they put that on. And during the day after they had the competitions, they gave you hot dogs and ice cream sandwiches and potato chips and soda. Then you'd go home and come back when it would start to get dark. It wasn't real dark yet because they'd have the awards ceremony where you got your different awards from whatever competition you won. And then what they would do is have fireworks, and it was the greatest. Everybody looked forward to Fields Day and getting to be that boy or girl of the year. And what made you boy or girl of the year was all during the summer there were different competitions. And if you won so many, and then you won on that day, you wound up being a boy or girl of the year, and then you got to win a bicycle. And that was usually donated from Town Fair. Town Fair was the great toy store. And Thursday nights was the biggest nights for community, because Thursday night, everything was open. Thursday was usually payday for most of the places around. That would be the night that you went out with your parents, because they'd have to go to the bank and go to J.J. Newberry's, where they had the great big luncheon counter and get whatever. Most of the time it was Sundays, or you'd go at Stewart's and have to make your own Sunday for 50 cents. Can you imagine that? And we were like, and putting all this goop on it, knowing it was going to make you sick, but you just couldn't not take it. And going to the toy store, the Coex on that Town Fair, and they sold all every kind of toy, and then upstairs was all baby furniture and baby clothes and whatnot. And they were the best merchants for the simple reason they understood that people wanted things but didn't have the money. So I think they were the first ones that started a layaway, and you could put a little money on it. But they were always there for the kids, and I know there were some kids that used to go there all the time. They would see them, and it wasn't long after that when they got to be teenagers, they gave them jobs, you know. So that's the type of mentality we had. You might have stayed with your own, but you helped somebody else. That was a big thing on Thursday night. Everybody was uptown. You saw people that you wouldn't have normally saw. You got to see them on Thursday nights because your parents took you there. And the community theater that used to be up on 7th Street, that was a big thing. Sundays after church, you could go to the movies, and I think it was like 50 cent then too. And you could stay and see two movies, you know. That was a big thing, where people got together. You know. So, and it was a big thing. As far as community, I guess the biggest thing I would say is, like on the weekends, on Sundays, after everybody had went to church, that's when we visited. We went by to see Miss So-and-so or Mr. So-and-so. They were usually sitting on their porch in the summertime. And you'd sit there and you'd go, okay, I got to go. They try to feed you, but that's okay. You'd either take it or you wouldn't. Then you go to the next one. You know, that was your time for visiting. And by 6, 7 o'clock, things were shutting down because people had to get in to get ready for work the next day. Children had a bedtime. I don't remember seeing at 9 o'clock. I don't remember seeing 9 o'clock unless I was sick, because you sleep, you know, you had to go to bed. My brother laughs and says he doesn't remember seeing the sunrise until he was like 17 or 18 years old. You know, sunset or sunrise, because we were in the summertime. I remember the blinds went down, the shades went down, and you were in the bed. You might not have been asleep yet, but you were going to be soon. So that's a lot of the difference. And I notice now, well, when my kids came along, there was Fields Day at school, which was a good thing, and parents came out for that. That was, parents came out for everything. You know, my dad worked, my dad worked at the Lone Star, but then he worked at night as well. He'd come home, get washed, get redressed, and go out to work. And my mom worked during the day, but it still didn't mean if we had something at school, one of them were going to be there. It was if I had, I remember when I was having my Vestager service set at for Girl Scouts, and we had a program before you got your pin, and my mom wasn't there yet. And I kept saying, my mom said she's going to be here, she's going to be late. And she was there. She was late, but she was there. And they held me off so I could wait till last to do it, so my mom could be there. The teachers, they did so much different than what they do now. We do have good teachers, but they're not the same. They're not the same. Times are different. Economy's different. I don't know whether they teach them something different. The kids are different that they have to deal with because, not that I think it's right. I remember, oh gosh, Miss Brownie had a paddle. The principal had the Board of Education paddle. And yes, I know they did use them. Most of the time, most kids got scared and they didn't have to worry about it. But there were some kids, they used them. They did paddle. There was another teacher. She used to walk around with the yardstick in the hallway. And if you were at the drinking fountain too long, she cracked that yardstick. Miss Dummery, she had the pointer. She was the music teacher. She had the pointer. So, yeah, there was corporal punishment back then. They didn't mind it, not one bit. And not only did they not mind it, the parents didn't mind it. Because the parents knew you had to do something for them to step that line. And if you did something for them to have to step that line, you might not want to go home because your parents were going to get you. And that was the bottom line. Not saying that that was the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do, but most people that had it done, they still living, and they're good people. They wound up being good people. Sometimes you have to get people's attention, children's attention, in order to get them to go the right way. Sometimes a crack. And I know they used to have you hold your hand out and take the ruler and slap the hand in school. A lot of things changed. Because when I started going to school, we prayed in school. But it wasn't too long after that they must have stopped, because I don't remember after that. So I was born in 53, so I went to school in, 58? Probably 57, because they had pre-kindergarten and kindergarten. And I remember starting, but I don't remember, first or second grade, but it's we used to have to pray. We used to have, and all the songs, all the old spiritual that we sing in church, we learned them in music class. We learned all of that in music class, but they don't have music class now. So I guess funding didn't allow it. So when funding stopped, a lot of the good things that kept people off the streets, because they didn't have after school programs, like for after school, where the school was concerned, because they didn't need it. Because they had Girl Scouts, they had Boy Scouts, they had YWCA, they had the Boys Club, they had the YMCA. They had things where kids were involved in. Plus they had your youth department had the different sports that they don't have the money for now. So now you gotta have, and all the moms didn't work. A lot of moms were home, so there was no need for an after-school program. And if mom wasn't home, grandma was living at home. So, because my mother wasn't home, but my grandmother was here. I think even if they hadn't been there, there were things that we were taught. Because when we came home from school, you came home from school, first thing you did, take off your school clothes and put on your play clothes. There was always something left there for snack, so you could grab your snack. Don't think about putting the television on. And even if you did, we ain't have but one channel anyway, so it didn't matter. But you had chores to do. There were things that you had to do. You had to make your bed before you went to school. You had to eat breakfast before you went to school. There was no school program that gave you breakfast. My mother got up and fixed our breakfast before she went to work. And I mean, she fixed real breakfast. Me get cereal. That happened on Saturdays when you could fix your own breakfast. But my mother got up and fixed pancakes and sausage or bacon and eggs, you know, biscuits. And we didn't have an electric stove. We didn't have a gas stove. We had a wooden coal stove where she had to get up in the morning and go and make a fire. So, and then we didn't have hot water running out of. And that was right here in Hudson. We weren't down south where people think. We were right there at 213 Columbus Street. We didn't have a bathtub in the bathroom. We had a galvanized tin tub that we just have to put water in, heat the water and put water in. There was an oblong one that my three brothers used, and my sister and I had this round one. They took a bath in the kitchen because there was less traffic. We got the dining room, and we had a Ben Franklin stove, a potbelly stove, and then the wooden coal stove in the kitchen that she cooked on. So, you know, times change. You know, the only thing that was in the bathroom was the toilet and the sink. It was about this long. You could barely, wide. You could barely turn around in it by the time I got older. And in the summertime, my mother would have my brothers take the tub outside and fill it with water and let the sun heat it up. And then they'd bring it back up for us to take a bath. Yeah, my mother made, because we didn't have much money, she made the fun of everything through food. Oh my gosh, my mother was the best cook in the world. And I can remember, like, we couldn't afford to do like birthday parties. There were six of us. So at the end of the school year, the summer, she would make this great big party for everybody. And it would be outside, and one of the fun things was she'd make homemade ice cream. And we'd have the ice cream churn. And the youngest one would start because it's easy to turn it then. And as it got started to get hard, it would be harder for it. So the older boys would be turning it by the time it was really ice cream. And then everybody would fight to try to get the dasher to eat the ice cream off. And she would do not bobbing for apples. She would take the apples and put them on a string and hang them on a clothesline. And we would try to get the apples. And I can remember waking up in the morning in the summertime, and you woke up to smelling pancakes and coffee and bacon. And she'd be out in the backyard with the grill, cooking that on the grill, on the barbecue grill, because she wasn't going to heat up the house because you had to do it with the wooden coal. That's a lot different. In fact, I don't want to ever go back there to doing that, because it was my job to keep the water in the back of the stove. It was also my job to take the ashes out, because I could do that. It was my job to sit on the wood when my brother had to saw it and help him put it into the woodshed. It was my job at Christmas time to keep the water in the Christmas tree, because we had real Christmas trees, and you don't have fires if you keep the water in it, you know, with the lights on. Again, everybody had a job. If you messed up in doing your job, you made it hard for everybody else, because if your job isn't done, theirs might not be able to be done if you didn't do yours. So that's the big difference from 2015 to growing up in the 50s and 60s. And, you know, real big difference.
Actually, I keep thinking back to the time you said you got lost in Hudson. I'd love to hear that story.
I was 16, and my sister-in-law, she was living, her and my brother were living with us, and they had two small children, and she always would. She was originally from New York City, so she was always liking to go out, and she was adventurous. I mean, if you live in New York City, ain't no big deal about getting lost in Hudson. How could you? So she goes, well, let's take the kids for a walk, and we're walking. And we went up Union Street, which is a street that I wasn't allowed on. And we kept on coming up Union. And I got lost way over, right over here at the baseball diamond on Fifth Street, a little bit over there by off of Union. And we went down up in there. And when I got there, I was like, I don't know where we are. And she goes, well, we came in here. I'm like, uh-uh. I don't even know how to get back home. And she said, you big dummy. She said, when you're walking somewhere, you look at where you're going. And then when you get to a certain spot, you just turn around and go back the same way. I was sweating bullets because I had never been over on Union Street. I was never allowed. And from that point on, I didn't go without somebody. But I started venturing around Hudson. I mean, I was 16. It was time to venture somewhere. But you were not allowed to go, so you didn't go. And the one time that I did go away from home, I must have been about 6. And it was a Sunday. And somebody had given me some money. And I remember coming upstairs and saying to my mom, can I go to the store? And there was a store down on Warren Street, first between Front and First. It was Ted's Candy Store. And, of course, back then you could get much candy for 10 cents. And so I asked my mom, could I go to the store? And she said, no, wait till your brothers come. Well, they weren't coming, and I wasn't waiting. And I waited till she turned her head. And I snatched my money. And I knew how to go because I'd gone with them. And I went, and they were all over the place looking for me. They couldn't find me. And I had went down to Ted's and got me a whole bag of penny candy. And when my brother found me, he says, oh, you're in trouble. He says, the only reason why we found you, because we saw Patty Carr. And Patty Carr said, what's the matter? What are y'all doing? We looking for Tony. Oh, I just saw her down on Horn Street. And Patty right now, she's about maybe 3 or 4 years older than me. When I see Patty, I'm like, you know what? I shouldn't like you because you got me in trouble. And my mother took my candy back from me. She spanked my butt, put me in the bed, and I still didn't get my candy. That was the worst. That was the worst thing. And I was so mad at Patty Carr for telling on me. But those were the things. And people were ready to, you know, band in to help them find me. But she had seen me. You know, there was a group of people looking for me. And she said, no, she's down there on Wall Street, down there by Ted's. I'm like, oh, wow, my brother got me home so fast. I'll never forget that as long as I live. And I don't even eat that penny candy now. But those were the difference. People would, if anybody got lost or anything, you know, everybody was calling, going out, sending their kids, go down the street. They can't find so-and-so. Go down the street, look down there. Have you seen them? You know, it was, that community was strong with that. And I don't care whose kid it was. They didn't even have to like the person. If the kid was missing, they still would ban it. And that's the thing that you learn. Community would do things like if people didn't have money to pay the rent, they'd have big parties in order to help them raise the money back then. Just have a party. It's a house party. But you paid to get in. And that money took care of helping somebody. I don't think they do that now either. But, hey, you do what you got to do to get by. People were good for holidays, Christmas. You went from one house to the other, and somebody always, you know, gave you something to eat. We would wait. I know as kids, we couldn't wait till after we opened our gifts and whatnot. And after we had dinner and cleaned up and whatnot, that was our time. Could we go visit so-and-so and see what they got for Christmas? And that was a regular thing. We went there. And their parent would say, oh, well, I got this. Come on here, sit down and eat. We didn't want to eat. We had just finished eating. We wanted to play with their kids. But just, you said, you know, okay, just a little bit. Or you'd say no thank you, because that was the other thing. You'd always say, you were taught to say no thank you. You just don't want it. Yeah. And I don't know whether the parents thought that the other people might think you didn't have food or whatever, but you were taught to say no. And sometimes you wanted it. You also were taught not to take money like the older people in the community. We had to go see if they needed any help during weekends. Like, there were people that I had to pick up their newspaper from the store and make sure that they had it every day. Or go up there and see if Aunt so-and-so needs you to go to the store to get anything before it gets too late. And if you went and helped any of the older people, they'd go give you 50 cents. You couldn't take it. You couldn't take it. You had to say, no, thank you. My mom said I can't take it, you know. And there were a couple of older women. I remember Miss Ida, she was the sweetest. She knew our parents told us no. So she would get something like, she'd watch the commercials and any of the new snack stuff that came out, she would make sure she had in her house. And mommy wouldn't say we couldn't have that. So she would make sure she had something like that. Or she'd give us a popsicle or something. But the older, like the old, they were senior citizens. They would see you on the street. And they would say, hey, come here, can you run around the corner and get me some popsicles? Or get me this and get yourself a popsicle like that. You know, so. But you don't have that now either. I remember going to visit, there was a, she had to be in her 90s. And I don't know what her name was because we all called her Granny. And Granny was living with her daughter and son-in-law, still taking care of herself pretty much. And I remember getting called any day of the week and my mother saying, go up, Granny's washing clothes and she needs you to help her put them on the line. And she lived about two doors up from us and I'd go. And Granny would hand me the clothes, and I'd pin them down, you know. It's like, wow. And she was in her 90s. She had to be 93, 95, you know. So people lived, they say they live in longer now, but people lived a long time back then, too. And they worked hard. You know, they did manual labor. I didn't do no manual labor. I sat behind a desk. Thank you, God. Didn't have to do that. And my mother made sure I didn't have, I wouldn't have to do that. That's why she made me go to school. So that I wouldn't have to work as hard as she did, because my mother worked very hard. She did housekeeping. She was a domestic, and she had a different house each day that she went to. And as I was growing up, I'd have to go with her, because I was the one to get down on the floor and dust the legs and doing the lifting. After my mother got older, you know, she needed help, and so there I was doing it. All of us went at one point in time, and then there whenever they had big parties and she would cater, she would take us as well. And I'd go out, and if they had any younger children, usually when they had the big dinner, the younger children didn't eat with them. And so they would have fed them earlier, and it was my job to go babysit, basically, keep them amused while they had their big dinners. And that was all over Hudson. She worked for doctors and lawyers, and what she did, and that's what she knew that she didn't want us to have to do. So she made sure that we went to school. You didn't bring in C's, because there was no reason for you to bring in a C. Your job was to go to school. Her and my father, and they both said their job was to provide for the family. Our job was to go to school and get an education. And so you had to do your job. You brought anything. I remember I brought in, I failed algebra prep 1, and I remember having to have a great big family meeting with my brothers and everybody. It's like, oh my gosh. And my brother's saying, she's just doing that because she ain't doing what she's supposed to. She's so busy looking at the boys and whatnot. And what it was I was clowning. That is the truth, but it wasn't like what they said. And what wound up happening was my parents were, not only were they angry, but they were hurt. Because there was no reason for it. No reason whatsoever. So I went back and I finished and I got it. And I didn't do Algebra Prep 2 because I changed my curriculum and I didn't need it. But other than that, there was no reason for you to bring in inferior grades, because all you had to do was go to school. And if you didn't understand, then you needed to tell your parent, and our parents would make sure that you had a tutor. And I had brothers that were older, and they knew, you know, so.
Have your brothers and sisters also remained in Hudson?
Some of them. They did. I have one brother still here. My sister was here till she passed. And my other brother moved. He moved, like, up to Albany. And the other one's in the city. And the other one that passed, he was in the city. So most of us stayed Some left and came back. I never left. Always wanted to, but I didn't. Once you get a certain age, you don't want to go. You know? And if you don't go when the getting is good, you just wind up staying. I still love Hudson, although it's different. I still love Hudson. Hudson is where my roots are. And there are families here that I still know. But it's getting fewer and fewer. And it's a good place for my grandkids to grow up. It might not be all of what I might want it to be, but if I look at the other places, it's a lot better. There's some things, you know, when you're growing up, you say, I can't wait to get out of there. And then you get out of there and you realize, oh gosh, I miss home. And then when you come back, I was away long enough to go to school. But then when I came back, it was like, no, I don't want to leave here. This is my home. I was so glad to get back in Hudson. And I was only in Troy. But I don't remember in Hudson people getting killed. And the first week I was in college in my house, that a car came by my house and threw a man out of the car. He was bleeding all over everywhere. And I had not seen nothing like that. Yes. And I was like, let me get back home. When I got back home, I was glad to be here. And maybe that's probably why I never moved. And I tried going back to Troy again after some time and looked for a job and couldn't find one, so I came back home. And I got a job. I got the same job I got in Albany. I should have been able to get living in Troy because I was working for the state, so I should have been able, but I wasn't able to get it because I didn't have the avenue. Nobody knew that they were hiring, but when I came home, the pastor of the church that I go to now, I wasn't going there then, he saw me in my building and he goes, do you know shorthand? Do you know how to type? And I'm like, yeah. He says, well, they're hiring. You got to go to school, though. They'll put you in school. And what they did was I went and I took the test and I was able to pass the test. And they put you in civil service did a program where they sent you back to school. It was for people who had been out of the workforce. And they put you in class to give you a refresher, but they paid you the whole time you were in class. You were automatically a state worker, and they guaranteed you a job. And you go through it. You take the civil service exam. It was a 9-month course, and I did it. I went in September, and I took my test in January, and I had a job in January. And I gave them 20 years of my life, and I'm done. That's enough. That's the thing of sometimes you be away and you think that, okay, away is better. The grass ain't always greener on the other side. And this is where I was supposed to be. And after having the kids, I didn't want them to live anywhere else. So, and most of my kids are still here. Yeah, so it ain't that bad. And I look at the kids. They're right into the community trying to make things better for their children and the people that live here. So it must have been what we were supposed to do. Okay?
What is your hope for Hudson in the future? Or for your children living here?
Well, I hope for them to do more than what my generation did, as far as advancing, and they're already starting to do it, to come back together, because it had gotten to a point where Hudson was them and us, and now with things that are happening, even like with this, people are starting to come back together and become a community and be aware of each other and somebody else's child. It's not, you didn't have to give birth for that child to be yours. No matter if you see something, a lot of times what you hear people say is, I'm not getting into none of my business, just it is your business. Because that same one might be the one that you may need before it's all over with. Because you're not getting any younger, you're getting older. And I go up and down the city streets of Hudson, I see so many kids that are grown now. And I don't even remember some of them because they look so different. but they remembered me. And it's, I think it's because of the time that you take and you say hello. Or, you better stop that or I'm going to tell your mom. Yeah, I know Miss Tony, she'll tell on me, you know, that type of thing. I think that when Hudson gets like that, and it will get that way as long as the kids, as long as the young people realize that it's not somebody else's job to make Hudson better. It's each one of our job. You've got to do something with it. If you're not doing anything to help it, then you've got to be doing something to hurt it. Because there's no in-between. It's either or. And if you're just sitting back and you have beautiful views, but you're not sharing them with anybody, you might not be able to bring it to fruition. But if you put it out there, somebody else might be able to do the leg work and the hand work. But they can't do any work if they don't have the suggestion. So that's what I'm hoping. That, and I'm seeing it happen. I'm seeing it with Vernon. I'm seeing it with Quentin. We wouldn't have thought that my son Vernon would be on the radio. And he does a good job. I listen to it every now and then to see just the type of stuff he's doing. And for them to have, to bring the different people on with the expertise that they have, a lot of things weren't being addressed because people didn't know how to address them. Or they chose not to, or whatever the case may be. But now they're being addressed, and people are hearing, oh, wow, that's so cool. Oh, I needed to hear that, or I didn't know that. And bringing people with, when the one child committed suicide, and they had the people at the school for these kids that are still here. But then there's other people that wouldn't be at that school to be able to get the information to how to get help. How do I deal with it when I'm going through this? And so to see him orchestrate that or be a part of that is just fabulous for me. And then Quentin, I'm watching him. And I have a daughter that's working at the hospital. And my gosh, I come home, this one's got this or this one's got that. And it's like, did they do this or did they do that? You know, to that's still being a part of this whole community. Yeah, so that's where I want to see Hudson get back to, and it will, you know, as long as you keep pushing it.
And you mentioned going to church as a child, and now do you attend the same church, and how big, what's the role of the church?
I went to I attend the same church that I started. My grandmother used to take us to church. It was no option. We had to go. And it's funny though, because the church, I go to Shiloh, and we're about to celebrate 100 years. And when I came back to Shiloh, because I went as a kid, and then when I wasn't a kid, I didn't go. And when I came back to Shiloh and got involved and looked at the church history, I must have been too young to realize my grandmother was church clerk. My grandmother was Sunday school superintendent. I'm church clerk. I'm Sunday school superintendent. And it just blew my mind when I found that out. You know, I was like, I must have been too young to even realize that that's what she was doing. And if she was Sunday school, she could have been Sunday school superintendent and me not know it, because I would have been in a Sunday school class with somebody who she wasn't my teacher, so I wouldn't have known it. So for me, that's wonderful, you know, to see that. And I'm probably in church more now than I ever was as a kid, and I thought I was there every minute of the day as a kid, but now that's my life. That's my life, and I know that's what keeps me here and keeps me going. It's not the church; it's God. And if I believe in God, which I do wholeheartedly, then I know I gotta go to church. One hand washes the other. I can't just sit home. I gotta be, and that helps me be a part of the community, because the church is there, the doors open to the community. And years, somewhere in between, from the way it started as a kid, kind of lost tact, where the church was the church and the community was the community. But growing up, the church and the community were the same. So. But now it's getting back slowly but surely. It's coming back. And what it took was the church having to come outside of the doors and go into, venture into the community. It was either going to be the church venturing into the community or the community being into the church. It seemed like the church should come into the community. And that's what's been happening. And not just Shiloh, but I'm noticing a lot of the other churches are doing it now. Coming out, being a part. The one church, Rock Solid, for the last few years, this was the first year, they had a float in the Flag Day parade. And so, you know, like, all right, you go ahead. Ah, the church has got a float. Wow. Okay. So people look at that. It may be, it may seem like it's something little. And they just thought that they were doing a float, being a part of the parade. So somebody asked them. But people see that. And that might make somebody come to your church or a church. Oh, they want to be a part of us. Well, maybe I'll go look and see what's going on inside those doors. So, there you go.
Is there anyone, like, whose name you would want to be remembered or shared, like, so if someone else was listening to this?
Just my mom, my dad, my grand, you know, those were, that was, oh gosh, truthfully, all those senior saints, there were so many that were a part of my life. You had, oh gosh, there was Miss Dot Cobbins, there was my mom, Bernice Cross, and Aunt Blanche was my mother's best friend's mother, and she was not my aunt, but we all called her Aunt Blanche. She was the lady, one of the older ladies on the block that would see you, you better be doing what you're supposed to. There was Miss Ida, who looked out her window all the time. Miss Bueller, she sat on her porch, and not one person that went to John L. Edwards School, she watched those kids to make sure the kids weren't fighting and making sure that everything was all right. We all looked at them at different times thinking that they were old busybodies, but they kept the community going. They kept things straight. My dad was the last of the old gentlemen. My dad, when he walked the streets, he tipped his hat. How you doing? How's it going? We couldn't even go up the street to go to the store and go right back. It seemed like it took forever because he had to speak to everybody. But that type of behavior is gone because nobody does that anymore. My dad, when he walked the streets, he always told you that he worked at the Lone Star. It was a cement plant. My dad would go to work in a suit, and I guess when he got to work, he put on his work clothes. And when he came back home, he showered before he left there. He came back home. He had a suit on. And my father, I can remember him saying, "These are my street clothes," because you just didn't go out any kind of way. My dad would never have allowed any of us girls to go out with rollers in our hair. If my father saw these young ladies out with their pajama bottoms on, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. I just can't imagine. I just can't imagine his reaction. That would not happen. Even me inside the house, my dad told me at a very young age, I was a prissy little girl because my grandmother, I was my grandmother's first granddaughter after like five boys. And I was a little princess. And I would get up in the morning and I'd want to walk around in my little princess night clothes with my beautiful robe on that my grandmother had brought me. And my dad came in one morning and he said to me, he said, "When you get up in the morning, you put your clothes on. You don't come out here dressed like that. You have brothers. It's time for you to start getting dressed. Do you hear me?" And that was the only time he ever had to tell me that. So when you get up in the morning, you go wash your face, you wash your body, you get dressed. You don't come out parading around in your house clothes and whatnot. So that type of thing taught me. And he took me, Daddy took me to the Winter Carnival. I was running for Winter Carnival Queen. And I took my dad as my date. And Daddy took me. And when I was ready to go home, I told my father, because it was a Friday, and I said, Daddy, Mommy said it was okay for me to go out. So I'm not going home. And he said to me, oh, yes, you are. He says, when I pick a young lady up, I bring her back to where I picked her up from. And so, again, you won't see that anymore. I mean, every now and then, but you don't see it as often. My dad was telling me that, you know, I was special and that I really shouldn't accept anybody else to be with me that didn't treat me special. He picked me up at the house. He brought me back to the house, even though as soon as he brought me back to the house, I didn't even go up the stairs. I went out, but that's what he was telling me. And so that would be definitely a person that I would always want to be remembered. And when I get among people that knew my dad, we start talking about the old times. My dad's name is one that'll be brought up, and usually not by me. Mr. Cross this, and that was it. It was Mr. Cross. You know, you didn't call him Ed. You called him Mr. Cross. That's how he acted. He was a man of few words, but when he spoke, oh gosh, everybody listened to him. Okay? You would have thought he was E.F. Hutton. We all listened. He told Quentin, you're my namesake, because Quentin's middle name is Edward. And he says, you're my namesake, and if you're going to carry my name, you've got to carry it right. And that's when Quentin was doing something he wasn't supposed to. So I'm sure he got to understand that Daddy was, you know, he didn't mess around. He was it for me. And a lot of people, I think a lot of people respected him. He didn't get involved in nonsense. But I think he loved people, and I think he respected people, and he got the respect because he gave it. He gave it without it being asked for. He respected people as human beings, and that was key. So that would be about all that I, you know, those are my mom, my dad, my grand. And the other two ladies that I brought out, they were part of Hudson. You had Miss Daisy Allstock, who worked with all the kids. She worked at the training school, but she also ran the youth center. That was another place where we hung out at. The Hudson Youth Center was on the corner of First and Columbia. And they would have, not just for you to go hang out at, they had different programs within that place where their Miss Dago would come and teach you how to cook, and another one would come and teach you how to sew. You had different things that was going on. And then there was a pool table so you could play pool and games going on. And then, I forgot who that lady was. She ran the charm class to try to teach us how to be little young ladies. And back then, they also had a thing where they had the cotillions, where when the young ladies were about to be 16, and they sold tickets and whatnot, and there was this big dance, and that's when they would be brought out, where everybody could see they're 16 now, they're young ladies, and they will be dating, and it was really, really nice. So those were about the only things that I do remember as far as community. I jumped back there, my mind went back.
What was the Winter Carnival?
Winter Carnival, they still have that, I think. Winter Carnival. You sold tickets, and there was a raffle. There was a raffle for a car. It raffled off a car. And it was this big dance, and they'd have it over here at the Armory. And the girl that sold the most tickets is the one who become Winter Carnival Queen. And most of the time, only people that would win, it's changed now, but back when I was in it, was somebody whose father had a lot of money. Because they Bible too, you know. But the rest of us, but during it, while you're waiting for the time to go on, while you're selling these tickets, they have different events. Like they'd have bowling night for us girls that were selling the tickets. And they had pizza night where we went over to this place to have pizza. A couple of other little things that they had. I remember when I was going to quit. I was selling tickets and I was going to quit because I went to sell the ticket. And lady, because they would have you go out to the stores. Certain nights, you were stationed in front of the store. And it was back when Barker's and Janesway was here. And we were stationed out, me and another girl. And there was some prejudice being shown with me. And I asked the woman, did she want to buy a ticket to sponsor for the Winter Carnival? And she asked me something that was totally, what for you to buy popcorn and play the hunky to me? And I looked at her, and then she turned right around, and the two of us, I was on this side of the door, the other girl was on that side of the door. She turned right around and bought the ticket from the other girl. And so I was like, ooh, that was the first time that I'd ever been actually up front with total prejudice, and that's what that was. I was 16, and I can remember going back when we had our meeting, and I told them, I don't want to be a part of this anymore. And they talked me out of it because they said that, and they were right, they said that they really can't control other people. This was somebody from the outside, and that they apologized for me having to go through it and whatnot, but it wasn't really anything that they could do. That was just her stupidity, basically. And they talked me into it. That's why I wound up taking my dad, because I was going to quit. And I wasn't, the person that I was going to ask was not going to be available, so I asked my dad to take me. Just go ahead and finish. And daddy had said that you went through it this far, why are you going to stop now? You know, if you stop now, you would be letting her win.